Hello and welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 271, and we're going to talk about noise, how to beat it while you're driving, and how to keep it out of your van while you're stopped. Getting a good night's sleep is very important. We're also going to talk about putting a hitch receiver on your vehicle in the front, a product review of a USB-powered water pump, and a place to visit where they make things, but probably not your van. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. First, a Wren update. So, as you may have heard, the truck camper that I'm working on has Wrens in it, Carolina Wrens, to be exact. While I had the floor opened up, they flew in and built a nest, and then they laid eggs, and now those eggs have become baby birds. Yeah, they're having a successful brood, apparently, which is great for the Wren family. However, it means I can't use my truck camper. Even I will admit, I was kind of hoping that the nest wouldn't be successful. My wife was hoping exactly the opposite, but anyway, successful brood. The babies are doing fine, mom and dad are feeding them, and they're going to own my truck camper now for a few more weeks. Yay, nature is wonderful and stuff, but no, it's fine. I like the Wrens. They make pretty noises, and they eat bugs, which is always a good thing. So, yeah, no truck camper for me for the time being. I do have other things in the works, though, and I'll let you know as those things come to fruition. So, it's funny. I just recorded an entire bit about interactions with the police, listened to it, didn't like it, recorded it again, listened to it, and I didn't like it, and now I'm throwing it out. I don't like it. I'm not ready to have this conversation about interacting with the police, especially since I am in a completely different position than other people. So you're not going to hear about that. Instead, you're going to hear about another problem that van life people have, and that is noise, which I'm experiencing right now. As I started recording this podcast, a Stanley steamer truck pulled up and is cleaning somebody's carpet. Ooh, it just stopped. Good. Yikes. Anyway, it can be loud in your van. It can be loud for a number of different reasons, and that can interfere with your sleeping, or it can increase fatigue while you're driving. So I put together a list of 10 things to know about keeping sound out of your van, both while you're driving and while you're parked. This isn't that small of an issue. Some people are light sleepers, and every sound of a nighthawk is going to wake them up, or every truck going by. And other people just get really tired with constant noise, which I completely understand. So, let's see what we can do to make your van a quieter place. Number one, seal the gaps. Yeah, sure, you're going to get some sound coming in through the windows and stuff, but if you've got holes, yeah, that sound is going to come right through. So make sure the weather stripping is good on your doors and windows, especially those rear doors. Those rear doors, the barn-style doors on most vans, are adjustable, and they're almost always out of adjustment. There's usually a big gap either where the doors meet or at the bottom. Do what you can to seal that, and honestly, one of the best and simplest ways is to just cover it with a blanket or even a moving blanket. Those moving blankets are pretty cheap, and they also work as soundproofing. So that's an option there. And for little tiny leaks, you know, you can seal them with some sealant or something, but those aren't the ones that are going to cause the most noise. If you have electrical pass-throughs or you have, like, vents, some foam gasket can help there, too. Number two, if you're adding windows, think about what kind of windows you're adding. So double pane windows are going to reduce sound a whole lot more. Now, this is not that common in van builds. Some RVs have these, but my truck camper does too. These double pane windows, which are often as simple as a piece of glass glued onto another piece of glass with a gap, can actually do a lot to keep sound out, and they're certainly better for thermal stuff. So if you're looking to add windows, see if you can get double pane. It's not worth ripping out windows and replacing it with that. But if you're putting in new windows, a double pane window will be quieter. Number three, while you're driving, a lot of the noise can actually come through the floor. So make sure you cover that metal floor with something that's going to absorb sound. And there's a lot of different things you can do. You can get mass-loaded vinyl, MLV, underlayment, which is used a lot for car stereo installations. It's just this big, heavy mat that kind of dampens everything down. You can use the kill mat solution, but you have to know how kill mat works. Kill mat, the way it is designed, is not meant to keep sound out. It's meant to stop ringing. So the idea is you would put it on a panel, and that would stop that panel from ringing or vibrating. And most vans have this already. There's already something attached there to stop this. But if you cover the entire surface with kill mat, then you've got a soundproofing situation. I'm not sure it's the greatest idea in the world. It's expensive, it's a lot of work, and it adds a lot of weight, but it will help keep the sound out. You know what else can help keep the sound out? Just a thick carpet. So you have that option too. Number four, insulation can help a lot. Now, I know insulation's a tough topic, but forgetting about temperature control, at this point for sound, insulation can make a huge difference. And it really doesn't matter what you use. All the insulations help, even thin slate, although even Reflectix, although not as much. Rock wool, thin slate, actual wool, those things are going to do a whole lot to keep sound out. And then if you cover them with something, so if you put the insulation up between the ribs and then cover the ribs with something, that's going to create a nice sound deadening chamber. In fact, when we were renovating a house in Virginia, we wanted the bedroom to have a soundproof wall between the guest room, and they filled it up with rock wool, and that actually made it very, very quiet. Number five, engine and drivetrain noise control. So, you know, vans can be loud. They're usually built as commercial vehicles, and, you know, they don't really care about the comfort of the driver so much. But there are some things you can do to keep it a little bit quieter in the cab. You can put a piece of thermal insulation under the hood. It's called hood liner insulation. If for some reason your van, maybe your van's older and mice have eaten that or whatever, you can replace that and that will help. And there are also underspray coatings that can be used, although I don't think those are a great idea. And then there's a thing called a transmission tunnel mat, which is the same idea. It's just a big rug you put over your tunnel where your transmission is. Now, if you have a doghouse, which is common on like an Econoline, those can leak a lot of sound. Make sure your gaskets around there are in good shape. And if you can cover that with carpet or something, that will help too. Also, make sure your muffler, your exhaust system, make sure all that is in good shape. Because if it's not, that can generate a whole lot of noise. Number six, tire choice and maintenance. Yeah, your tires are going to have a big impact on how much noise there is in your vehicle while you're driving. Those big aggressive AT tires make a lot of noise and it gets very, very tiring. Meanwhile, the high-speed highway tires don't make as much noise, but they're not as good off-road. So you kind of have to figure out what's more important to you. I will say that I changed the tires on my NV200 to a newer tire from, I think it was Cooper's that were on there, and the van became much quieter immediately. On my bigger van, the Sprinter, I replaced the stock tires, I don't remember what they were, with Nokian Outpost tires, which are a semi-AT tire. And yeah, it did get louder, but it was worth it for me because I really wanted that increased traction. Also, make sure your tires are the proper inflation. Sometimes if they're too soft, you'll get this roar noise. And that's especially if you've driven off-road and you lowered the pressure out of your tires. If you get back on the highway and you hear this roar, yeah, you probably forgot to air your tires back up again. Number seven, cabin partitioning. Well, yeah, if you have a partition between the cabin and the back of the van, that's certainly going to help. Not only when you're driving, but also when you're parked, because all that single pane glass in the front now has another layer for the sound to get through. So that absolutely can help. And you know, it doesn't have to be a hard thing. A thermal curtain, like I had in my NV200, that actually helped a bit. But if you want to be a little bit more soundproofing, again, you can use those moving blankets. A quilted blanket will actually block out sound quite a bit, and then it can act as a curtain. It'd be fairly easy to do that. Number eight, vent and fan management. This one's a little trickier because you probably want the ventilation, so then you've got just a hole, and there's not much you can do about that. But if you're in a situation where you're not using the vents, be sure to cover them with something. Usually the stuff that's made to cover vents is like a thick blanket material that straps up or fits in there. That will help a lot with sound, but you can't use the vent. And as for vents themselves making noise, when you mount your vent on the roof, make sure that it isn't going to rattle or create a whistling noise as the wind passes over it. And you might have to play a bit to get that right. And then more expensive fans tend to make less sounds. Make sure you look at the noise level of the fan. If that's something that bothers you, make sure you get a quiet fan. And in my experience, the more expensive fans are quieter, and the cheap fans are really super noisy. Number 9, consider external noise buffers. When I lived in Vermont, we had this beautiful property out in the woods, but we could hear the highway all the time. Even though it was through trees and stuff, it was a mile away, but the sound carried. And we talked to some folks about, like, how do we stop this? Well, the only thing that really works in that case is dirt. You need to build a berm between you and the highway, and that really wasn't feasible where we were. But it can be for you to park. Consider your parking spot and consider how sheltered it is. There are some that are more sheltered than others, and they will get less road noise. For example, if you're going to park at a rest area, and it's one of those rest areas with like truck parking in the front and car parking in the back, and you're kind of in the middle of those two, well, go park with the cars. You'll be farther away from the trucks. You have to think about it like that. And if you can park way in the back near the woods or whatever, rather than closer to the highway, that can help too. It's not going to be perfectly quiet, but it helps. And number 10, and this is actually the real solution in my opinion, this is what I do, it's a white noise machine. Now, if you're somebody who can sleep with headphones in or earplugs or something like that, you can do that too. I find that that makes me uncomfortable because any little sound I hear that gets through those, it's automatically an emergency and it wakes me right up, and that bugs me. So white noise is how I handle it. I have very loud fans on purpose, and they provide enough noise that I can usually ignore whatever else is going on. Or if I'm in a situation where I can't have the fan noise that I want, I will actually just run a white noise app on my phone or iPad or computer, and that will help an awful lot. I have become accustomed to sleeping with white noise. I have trouble sleeping in a silent room, and I think that helps me in this regard, but it might not help you, so that's a personal thing. Now remember that people camp in tents, you know? Silence was never a guarantee in this lifestyle. And if you're coming from a home where you have a completely silent bedroom, you're going to have to make some adjustments. And you have two choices. You can fight it, or you can embrace it, or do something in the middle. And hope some of these ideas will help you get to where you need to be. Thanks to everyone who has visited buymeacoffee.com/builttogo and bought me a gallon of whatever. This is the reason there are no ads in this podcast, and I thank you, and everyone thanks you. If you would like to help support the podcast, please visit buymeacoffee.com/builttogo. That's 2 T's, not 3.1. And you can help keep ads away from the podcast. Thank you very much. Van Life News. So, as was planned or warned about or whatever, the de minimis tariff thing has been enacted. It used to be that if you were sending something from some far-off land to the U.S. and it was worth less than $800, you wouldn't have to worry about tariffs. That is now gone. Now tariffs apply to everything except for gifts under $100. That's a gift. That means no money was exchanged. And what does that mean for us in van life? Well, it is really going to affect small sellers. So companies like Temu and Amazon and Shine or Sheen or whatever it's called, they have managed to get around the tariffs somehow. They have tricks up their sleeves. They're importing the goods in a different way. I don't know how they're getting around it, but so far from what I've seen, tariffs haven't impacted them in this regard. But little companies? Oh yeah, I've seen the impact immediately. For example, I really like the band Big Country, and they sent out a notice saying that they're no longer able to send any merch to the United States. They just can't. Canada, I ordered a shirt from somebody in Canada, and they shipped it, and now it's stuck in customs. I don't know if it's ever going to come to me. I don't know if they're going to send me a bill. I don't know what's going to happen. I may never get that. So I'm watching that to see what happens. And then a lot of the postal services in Europe just said, no, we're not dealing with this. And they refuse to send packages to the U.S. So if you're trying to get certain things from overseas, especially custom things, it's going to be much harder now. Now, I haven't seen much impact on like Amazon as a whole, although I did find a few items that it said cannot ship to your address, which I've never seen before. And I played around with changing addresses and such, and nothing I typed in there could make it work. And I thought that was interesting. So we'll see. But legally right now, if you buy something from $50 and it's shipped from China, you have to pay a tariff on it. And I don't know what's going to happen. So just letting you know, it may be too late, or it may not. I would definitely recommend that if you see something you want and you can buy it now without a tariff, you should go ahead and do that, because they may start cracking down on this a lot more. I have a link from Reuters in the show notes, and you can read more about that. In the good news department, which is a very thin department of late, they are working on a new way, actually an old way, to harness solar power. So on the roof of your van, if you have solar power, you have what are called photovoltaic cells. Photovoltaic, light into voltage, turns light into electricity, that's how they work. Sunlight comes down, the cells convert that energy from the sunlight into electricity, goes to your battery, that's how it works. But light isn't the only energy coming from the sun, there's also heat. And they are working on a type of solar panel that doesn't have cells. It just gets hot, and the heat from the sun is then turned into electricity. We have seen some of these devices before. There's a camping device that you put in a fire, and then you can charge your USB devices off of it. So the idea of turning heat directly into electricity without, like, boiling water and using a steam turbine or anything like that has been explored before, but they seem to be making progress now. So wouldn't that be interesting? Imagine if you could just have your whole roof painted black, and that could be converted into energy that you could charge your batteries with. Might be pie in the sky, but I hope it's true. And I have a link from technology.org that talks about how that works. Finally, yeah, more of this news. In Saratoga Springs, a man was fined for sitting. That's right. This man was in a public area on a sidewalk in Saratoga Springs, and he is a busker. Now, his form of busking is that he tells stories, and it's called Extraordinary True Stories in Under 60 Seconds. So kind of like Tales from the Road, but short ones, and probably better. He sits on the stool, and you give him a dollar or a donation or whatever, and he'll tell you a story in under 60 seconds. Because he is sitting, they fined him under the anti-homelessness rules. If he was standing, they wouldn't fine him. Because, you see, sitting is awfully close to sleeping, apparently. And sleeping is same as being homeless. And, yeah. So, now it turns out, like I was afraid of, this guy, his name is Brian Brown, is actually a homeless person and has been ticketed for being homeless, and he's being targeted by the police with these vague laws. If you or I went to that same place and sat down on the sidewalk, I don't think anything would happen. But now they've got these laws that they can enforce only when they want to go after people they don't like. And I think that's what's happening to Mr. Brown here. And I think it is despicable. But if you'd like to read more about that, it's in the Times Union, and I have a link in the show notes. If anyone has any good news out there, please send it my way, because, boy, I would like to share that with folks. Tech Talk! So, hitch receivers, right? This is the thing you mount in the back of your vehicle, and it's like a square tube, and you can put your hitch in there, or your bicycle rack, or your swing, or whatever the heck else you want to attach to these things. There are a lot of attachments for hitches. And yes, you can tow a trailer with it, too. But did you know that you can get a hitch for the front of your vehicle? Most vehicles, especially the larger ones, you can get a hitch that mounts to the front. Now, no, you're not going to push your trailer with this, except you can. So the first use for this is, let's say that you've got a trailer, and maybe it's very big, or maybe it's just awkward, and you need to park it very carefully, you can unhook and then turn your truck around and then hook up to the front hitch. And then you have a lot more control over backing it in. I actually knew a guy who did this in Florida all the time. You can't do this at speed, obviously. This is going to be very low speed, non-road use. But it is a thing you can do. The other thing you can do with one of these is just use all the accessories. You can put your spare tire there. You can put a step there so you can actually get into the engine and check the oil. You can put a safe in there. You can put a bike rack. I mean, there's so many things. I've seen hammock stands. I've seen toilet seats, all kind of things that you can hook up to a hitch. So, yeah, maybe this is something that would work for you. I mean, heck, you could even do some sort of a removable grill guard that was attached to this hitch. They're $300 or $400. Installation is tricky. If you have a diesel, it's much harder, and you're only going to find this for certain vehicles. Because if you look at the front of a vehicle, everything is very carefully applied there, and because of crash zones, it's hard to fit something like this in there. But it is doable, and you can do it. I don't have a link to anything specific, but I can tell you that if you go to etrailer.com and type in front hitch receiver, you will find options, and you can type in your vehicle to see if you have this too. If you've been looking for a place to put the bikes where it's not interfering with your back doors, this could be just the thing you need. Product review. So you have probably seen these USB-powered water pumps that basically just sit on top of a water bottle, and you press a button, and water comes out. They're very, very simple. They're very, very affordable, and I finally got one. So this one I got was $9.98, not a whole lot of money, and is made by MyVision, which is probably not a company. I don't know, but I got it, and it was $9.98, so that all worked fine. There are a lot of different ones of these. Many of them are exactly the same with different labels, but others are different, and it usually seems to depend on how the spout works. This one has a solid metal straw that comes out, and then it does a 90-degree angle, and that's your faucet. On the top is a button. You press the button, water comes out. You press the button again, water stops coming out. That's it. The water that comes out has considerable force. It's certainly nothing like a garden hose, but it's basically comparable to what you would get from a hand pump or one of those whale foot pumps. It's enough to do your dishes, it's enough to wash your hands, and it's enough to fill up a glass of water. And being USB powered, which isn't actually true, there's a battery in here, it's USB rechargeable, you can take it anywhere. You basically can go get one of those 4 or 5 gallon jugs of water, stick this on it, and you have an instant faucet. And if you're in a no-build situation or, like, say, a tent situation, you can move this thing around. You can move it outside a port-a-john, you can put it on the tailgate of your truck. Or, if you want a more permanent solution, it turns out that the pump does not have to be on top of the bottle. Underneath the pump is a hose. It's a hose that you dip in the water. It doesn't have any pressure. As long as that hose is in water, the pump will work. So you can actually mount it next to a sink and then run that little hose somewhere else where it can get into the water, and then it will work. So what do I think? Well, it works. It's not the most elegant thing in the world. You can't control how much water comes out, and you're never going to get hot water out of this thing unless the water is hot to begin with, and then I don't know how this would hold up with hot water. But it works, and it lasts a really long time. I mean, I think in normal use, you'll easily get 2 weeks out of a charge for one of these things. But if you're not doing the strict no-build thing, heck, you can just wire it in so it always has USB power, and you never have to worry about it. Plumbing-wise, holy cow, you're not going to have any less plumbing. It's dead simple, and it's $9.98, and you can have running water in your rig in like 2 minutes. So I think it's a great solution. I kind of wish I had done this in my NV200 where I put in that 12-volt immersion pump, which worked fine, by the way, and that faucet was nice because I could attach a shower head to it and stuff like that. But this is so very simple. And then you have the choice of either filling the 5 or 4 gallon bottle, which seems to be the size they come in, with more water, or you can literally just take the empty into where, you know, Home Depot or Menards or whatever and swap it out, although that's going to be probably the most expensive way. I don't know what to tell you, folks. The thing works. It is an easy way to get running water in your rig It's a great way to get portable running water in your rig, and it's $9.98. It is not a big investment if you just want to try it out. And there are a whole bunch of different options for colors and stuff, and there are some that have a faucet part that kind of folds into the unit and snaps, so it becomes more streamlined, and then that's actually how you turn on the water. You pull down the faucet and water comes out. I chose to get this because I could actually attach hoses to this and do other things. I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do with it, to be honest. I'm just reporting that the thing works. It's pretty good, and it's really cheap. So, link in the show notes. Tales from the Road. You know, some of these tales really make me look like an idiot, and I'm thinking I should just have a whole podcast called Jeff Screws Up Again. And this is definitely one of those. And, well, what the heck. I will tell the tale, and you can learn from my mistakes, hopefully. So the year was 1989, I think. And I was living in Utah, and I had a friend who worked for the Girl Scouts and had just taken a job in Cedar City, Utah. So we were in Salt Lake. We're going to go to Cedar City, a few-hour drive. Beautiful country down there, absolutely true. I mean, almost all of Utah you can say that about, but Cedar City is really nice. Now, she needed to bring her stuff, and some of her stuff was she had this queen-size mattress and box spring, which would not fit into her K-car that she was driving. And I, at the time, was driving this Toyota Mini Cruiser, which is a micro RV. So think about a Class C RV, but with a Toyota pickup truck front. One thing that had was a big roof, and so I offered that I would drive down and we would put the mattress and the box spring on the roof of the Winnebago. Sure enough, that's what we did. And I went up there and, you know, tied it down and said, as I'm supposed to, because I still want to hold on to my man card, I said, "That's not going anywhere." And we start heading down I-15, and we're just getting over the big hill, and then I notice this big shadow go past the rear window of the vehicle. Like, suddenly, where there was light, there was no light. And then there was light again. And I thought, that probably wasn't good. And I look in the rearview mirror, and yeah, there's a mattress in the middle of the highway. Okay, that's bad. What's worse is, I was driving fairly slow at that point, because there was a state trooper behind me. And, the state trooper hit the mattress. Now, the state trooper was driving a pickup truck. So, it was state trooper, but it was in a pickup truck. It wasn't a car. And the way he hit the mattress, it bounced up and got wrapped around his drive shaft in the universal joint. So, it had torn the cloth off the mattress, and it all got stuck in his universal joint. So he had to pull over very, very quickly. Now at this point, I'm like, oh, no. So before any lights happen or anything, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to be like, yep, I screwed up, whatever. I pulled over, and I looked up on the roof, and yeah, the box spring was still there, but that "it's not going anywhere" knot I tied had come undone, and it was really stupid. Learn from this. If you're going to tie a big flat object onto a vehicle, it is a wing. It will have lots of force. You need to really, really tie that thing down, not only from the sides, but from the ends as well. Else you may find yourself in a similar situation. And so I'm like, oh, God. Now, I get out, and I start walking down the shoulder, and I'm maybe a quarter mile from the cop at this point because of how quickly he stopped and how long it took me. But I finally get down there, and the cop is under the van, under his truck, trying to dig out the cloth. And I said, hey, man, I'm just going to go get the mattress so it's out of the road. And he said, all right, be careful. And I did. I walked back all the way and pulled the mattress off to the side of the road. And then I did the walk of shame back up to the police. And I'm like, okay, here we go. And I just kind of walked up, and he was still taking the thing out of his drive shaft. And I was like, he wasn't really paying any attention to me. And I was like, well, I guess I'll just go and wait in the RV. And I didn't say anything to the cop. I just walked up and sat in the RV and told everyone I was traveling with what happened. And I waited and waited and waited. And then I realized that I'm being an idiot because this cop is not actually coming after me. Either he didn't realize that the mattress came off of my vehicle, or he didn't care. He was so focused on dealing with the problem that he didn't worry about the perp, so to speak. So I decided to turn off the hazard lights and see what happened, and there was no change. And then I started driving down the road a bit, and he never came after me. I'm not sure he could have. I don't know how much damage it did to the vehicle. But, I feel like I kind of gave the cop a chance to deal with me, but then in retrospect, I realized that the cop had no reason to know that I was the guy in the RV, and I'm assuming he knew that it flew off the RV. So I pulled over to the next rest area and crawled back on the roof and really tightened down the box spring, which was still there. And my friend who lost the mattress was not at all happy about this, which I don't blame her because she had to sleep on just a box spring at least for a little while. So, don't do any of that. None of that is good. Yeah, just don't. A place to visit. One of my favorite things to do when I was a kid traveling around with my folks was to go to factory tours and, like, watch how things were made. And we went to a pretzel factory and went to a chocolate factory, went to a spice factory out in California. That was different. And it was a great thing. I learned how things were made. I got to see how these big production lines worked. And the beer factories, went to a few beer factories. That was interesting too, where I learned that beechwood aged does not refer to a beechwood cask, but actually means they put little balls of beechwood in the stainless steel vats. That's the beechwood aging. Yeah, whatever. But in recent years, those have all gone away. I mean, most of them have. Liability reasons, factories closing and moving overseas, all these reasons. It's hard to do a factory tour. But I did find one, and I have not checked it out myself, but I've added it to the list. And this is a big one. This is in Cambridge, Ontario, and it's a Toyota plant. This is the largest Toyota plant in North America. If you drive a Toyota sedan, or a Lexus sedan for that matter, there's a very good chance that it came out of this plant in Cambridge, Ontario. And yes, they do tours. And it's a very organized tour. You sit down and, you know, you watch a movie and they talk about the history of the company and whatever. And then they take you on a tram ride through the factory itself, where you can see all the people and robots working to assemble cars. This is a really kind of fun, different thing to do when you're doing a road trip. And it gives you a new perspective of how cars are built. You know, generally we only see them at the dealer, like, oh, there's a car and it's a complete object. But in the factory you see that, oh, I see the body. That's why it's called a unibody, because the whole body is one piece. And then they attach the axles and wheels to that, and the hoods and doors. And holy cow, the entire dashboard goes in as one piece. And all that kind of stuff I find fascinating. You might not. You might think that sounds like the most boring thing in the world. But if you think that sounds like fun, you can still take tours of the Toyota factory in Cambridge, Ontario. And I have a link in the show notes for it. But it isn't too hard to find. It is tmmc.ca. So that's Tom Michael Michael Charlie.ca. Go there and you can find the links for registering for a plant tour. I think it would be a really interesting thing to do, especially if you're on a long road trip and you need to break it up a bit. And I have enjoyed every single factory tour I've ever been on, so I hope you do too. Resource recommendation. I was a Boy Scout. I know, hard to believe, but one of the things I learned in Boy Scouts was how to tie knots, clove hitches, bowlines, two half hitches, and yes, the sheep shank, a knot I don't think I've ever needed to use for anything. All it does is shorten rope without losing strength. I haven't had to do that. However, I do use all these knots all the time. Two half hitches, taut lines, bowlines, lark's heads, square knots. I use these knots all the time, almost daily. In fact, when I take the trash out, I always be careful to tie the bag into a square knot, because we will not have any granny knots in this household. Point is, knots are useful, and they're a good skill to have, and they're especially useful for camping. And I found a great video on basically on knots that you should know for camping. Camping knots. And these are especially useful for, like, if you need to put up a tarp or if you want a knot that is adjustable. Like, you can pull it tight but then loosen it if you need to. And you'll learn about the trucker's knot and things like that in this video. So this is from Xander Budnick. I think he's from Canada based on the accent. And he's just doing bushcraft. You know, he's out there with just not even a tent. He just has kind of a lean-to tarp. And he uses ropes all the time. So take 10 minutes. Watch this video, grab yourself a shoelace or something and practice along with. And if you can learn how to do these knots, you are never going to forget them and you are going to have the skill forever. And if you're going to tie down a mattress on top of your RV, these are the knots to use, not the ones I used. Even though I was a Boy Scout, I used the wrong knots. I wish I had seen this video then. So if you want to just search YouTube for it, it is Top 5 Tarp and Camping Knots by Xander Budnick, or I have a link in the show notes. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 271. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. And if you need to get a hold of me for any reason, I am Jeff at builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. And until next time, remember the words of Albert Camus, who said, "Autumn is a second spring when every leaf is a flower."